For just one corporate job, only 4 to 6 people will get an interview for every 250 resumes received. Those aren't very good odds if you're counting on that job. The fact is, you need a real person advocating to a real employer that has a real job, and that's where Express Employment Professionals come in. Express is your local resource to help you get a new job. Express has more than 18,000 jobs available weekly. That's 18,000 jobs that need to be filled right now. Find your nearest office at expresspros.com, and Express never charges a job seeker to find employment. Your locally owned Express office can connect you with available jobs in your community. On expresspros.com, find jobs in manufacturing, accounting, customer service, sales, distribution, and information technology, you name it. Visit the nearest Express office today to speak with hiring professionals connected to the available jobs in your community. Visit ExpressPros.com today to find a location near you. ExpressPros.com.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Nick Redfern is the author of more than 40 books on UFOs, lake monsters, zombies, Hollywood scandals, and of course he's investigated the Roswell UFO conspiracy, women in black, men in black, and so many more. And he is a regular guest on Coast to Coast. Welcome, Nick Redfern. Nick, always a pleasure.
Hey, George. Likewise. How's things?
Things are good. Our webmaster of the night, Greg Bishop, says hello. Says he just is one of your dear friends.
Yeah, I've known Greg many years, probably 20 years now, something like that.
That's great. Super, super, super. Brand new book out, Shapeshifters. What are shapeshifters, Nick?
Well, I think when you mention shapeshifters, people traditionally, you know, think of classic werewolf-type stories. But when I was putting the book together, one of the things that sort of really intrigued me was the fact that, you know, you can go far beyond just the issue of werewolves when you're talking about shapeshifters. For example, in the book, I've got stories of people claiming to have seen Bigfoot-type creatures sort of literally morphing into other creatures, reports of men in black actually sort of changing their shape and form. And so, in other words, the book really doesn't just sort of focus on, as I said, the traditional werewolf folklore, which is certainly in the book, but it also demonstrates how so-called shapeshifters can be found in the UFO subject in relation to Native American belief systems, UFOs, crop circles, the chupacabra. And so, in other words, it basically goes far beyond the general image that people have of when you start talking about things like morphing monsters and changing cryptids. It covers all that, but it also goes much further as well.
It's really a book on the supernatural, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's the whole issue of shapeshifting is very controversial. And the more you look into it, the more you find we are dealing with something that is sort of definitively supernatural rather than, you know, extraterrestrial or traditional cryptozoology. And that's one of the sort of the challenging things. You're dealing with a subject which, you know, when you're dealing with the paranormal, the supernatural, even the occult, you find yourself really going down some very odd and sinister pathways, really, and particularly with regard to these sort of nightmarish shapeshifter creatures.
Was there ever a time, Nick, early on in your career that you would have said to yourself, ah, this stuff's not real. Come on, Nick.
Well, I think, you know, that you always have to keep an open mind on various things like this. And, of course, the more controversial the subject is, the more rigorous you need to be in terms of investigating the stories. And that's what I did, you know, with this book. I mean, there are sort of multiple dozens of, you know, first-hand interviews with people. And I always think it's important to, when you're speaking to people, you know, you become a good judge of character. And when you speak to people and they, you know, you sit opposite them and you hear these stories and you can see the concern in their eyes, you know, and in their voice, and, you know, they just want answers as to what happened. For me, this demonstrates, you know, the credibility of the witnesses. even though the stories are, you know, incredible and highly controversial. So I always think, you know, it's the witness testimony that is so important. And it's important, you know, to help to try and determine the validity of what they're saying, you know. And the best way to do that is sort of first-hand interviews, get corroboration. And also, as I also point out in the book, you know, actually get out to the sites where these encounters have occurred and look for the things on a first-hand basis.
You have talked about skinwalkers in the book. How did they enter the story?
Well, the skinwalker, you know, is a very intriguing but also sinister type character, which, you know, plays a major role in Native American lore, and to the extent that a lot of people in the Native American world will not even mention the word, you know, as I talk about in the bird, you know, I refer to it in the book as the S word, because a lot of people that they literally will not talk about it. Now, the skinwalker is, as I said, a very dangerous or potentially dangerous shapeshifter that, according to the ancient lore, can take on multiple different forms. But also, there are a lot of bizarre and sinister side effects as well. For example, when people have been in close proximity to skinwalkers, they've reportedly fallen sick and ill very quickly, almost as if they've been sort of paranormally infected or supernaturally infected in some way. And talking about sort of first-hand investigations, back in 2010, I did a TV shoot for VH1 where we actually went out into to the California desert where there'd been reports of skinwalker-type creatures. And I actually got to see firsthand the seriousness with which, you know, these reports are taken, and also the deep concerns that people had about, or reluctance, I should say, even about talking with regard to these experiences. But one of the things that I was told was that the various sort of multiple forms that Native American lore suggests the skinwalker can turn into, many of the people talked about seeing these giant wolves, which were far bigger than any regular wolf that you would ever see, and that includes sort of, you know, prehistoric wolves as well. And again, you know, listening to these stories of people telling me how they saw these sort of massive wolves that reportedly could walk on four legs and also rise up onto their back legs as well, you know, not only did it create sort of a werewolf type imagery, but it demonstrated, you know, the sort of bizarre nature of these skinwalkers. And a couple of people told me stories of how they'd seen these wolf type creatures morph into the form of like an old lady, and sort of very sinister looking old lady. So although, you know, that the skeptics might write these stories off as just folklore, what fascinates me is that these ancient beliefs are still there, you know, and they're taken extremely seriously as well.
They sure are. And, you know, with these skinwalkers, have they ever been known to hurt anybody?
Well, that's an interesting question. I guess it depends how you sort of define, you know, hurt people. I mean, I talk again in the book, and, you know, I just briefly mentioned earlier how people have talked about having fallen sick and ill in close proximity to skinwalkers. Now, in that particular situation, we're talking about people literally almost overnight, in some cases, going down with very bizarre and rare and serious illnesses that, you know, required, you know, emergency treatment. And I think I've probably got somewhere in the region of about 7 or 8 cases of people who allegedly were in very, very close proximity to these creatures, including these large wolf-like animals, and then they got sick. Now, whether that's just, you know, a byproduct of some sort of energy given off by the skinwalkers, or whether it's a deliberate attempt to target us, you know, I think the jury's still open on that. But to say that there have, you know, there have been people harmed by being in proximity to these creatures, that is correct.
Nick Redfern with us. His latest book is called Shapeshifters. You toss in Men in Black and shapeshifting. How do you correlate that?
Well, I think, you know, George, one of the interesting things is when you think about the Men in Black, most people outside of ufology would think of, you know, Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones.
That's right. Movies.
And even for a lot of people in ufology, you know, the assumption is that the Men in Black are government agents, so to speak. But when you look at the vast majority of all the reports, there are actually a lot of weird and supernatural aspects to the Men in Black cases. You know, they're typically described as being very pale and skinny and give off this sort of sinister vibe. The reports of Men in Black turning up on people's doorsteps late at night and having this sort of mind control ability to force people to open the front door and let them in. You know, so it actually takes us down some very odd pathways. Now, in terms of shapeshifters, one of the most bizarre stories that I got, this going back to a couple of years, came from a lady who had had a UFO encounter. This was in California. Mm-hmm. Had a UFO encounter, and 2 days later was visited by these two creepy men in black, you know, the classic imagery of the sort of pale.
Yep. No personality.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of almost zombified, like, and warned her not to talk about these particular encounters that she'd had. And she was sort of terrified, you know, just pinned to the couch with fear. And as they got up and left the room and went to the front door, opened the front door, went down the driveway, and the woman just basically sort of had the strength and power to stand up to slam the front door behind them. As she went to do that, she said she saw the Men in Black kind of shimmer, and they sort of shrunk into two balls of light, bright balls of light, which then winked out of existence. Now, reports like that are almost incredibly impossible to figure out and understand properly.
It's difficult to comprehend, too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But that's actually not the only case I've got along those lines. An equally bizarre one is a man and his wife who had their own encounter with a man in black, and who, in a very bizarre situation, they said morphed into like a large black dog with fiery, blazing red eyes.
Jeez.
Yeah, so, you know, it really takes us down almost like a, you know, a real-life horror story, so to speak. And again, I spoke to these witnesses both personally, in person, not just on the phone or via email, and you know, they all came across as very, very credible, even though the stories are incredible. And for me, it demonstrates further that whatever the Men in Black are, it goes far beyond, you know, as I said, the Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones
sounds like you don't believe they're government agents.
No, I don't believe the Men in Black are. Now, that's not to say that that occasionally, you know, governments may have possibly even sort of utilized or exploited the Men in Black phenomenon by actually dressing up in the black suits and you know, silencing people in certain UFO cases. But I think if that has happened, it's because the government has latched onto the pre-existing reports, which are far more supernaturally based. But these stories of the Men in Black kind of changing their form, they're certainly not, you know, talked about in the vast majority of the reports, but there are enough cases on record where they have changed their form, their shape into another kind of entity. Or with these balls of light, it kind of suggests that they may be some sort of intelligent energy almost. You know, the idea of literally being able to alter their form from human-looking to these sort of like beach ball-sized balls of light, which then wink out of existence.
Did anybody ever say that they branded weapons or anything like that?
No, that's the odd thing. You would imagine that if they were from the government or, you know, from some rogue agency, that there would be a degree of, you know, flashing ID cards and warning people and, you know. But it's almost as if the threat actually is kind of delivered by things that just are not human. I would say of all the, you know, except having done several books on the Men in Black, I would say close to 100% of the reports I have actually fall into this weirder, far more supernatural category, where, as I said, they look kind of zombified and pale. They look ill and sickly. And again, there's also a parallel with the skinwalkers, that there are a number of reports where, after the Men in Black have left, in the days that follow, the witnesses, again, like the skinwalkers, have fallen sick. Again, as if some sort of supernatural residual energy of a very negative nature has been left behind in the home, and it's sort of impacted on the health of the person, which of course, you know, again takes it far, far away from the, you know, the angle of, oh, it's this agency or that agency.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.